It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Good morning. Welcome to the show today. We have quite a show for you today. In a few minutes, Bridgeport Councilwoman Maria Pereira will be on. She was one of hundreds who attended a march yesterday. So did Wayne Winston, who's a regular on our show on Wednesdays. Attending a march in support of the family of Lawrence Smith Fields, who feels that they were treated very, very poorly, and that's an understatement, because their loved one, Lauren, who was a daughter, who was a sister, who was a family member, a beloved friend, was only 23 years old when she died on December 11th. And the report came in on December 12th. So maybe she died the morning of December 12th. And she died in mysterious circumstance. The autopsy results are still pending. So that's something that is very important to recognize. The autopsy results are still pending. This story was originally broken by Frank Recchi of News 12. And we've got a little bit of his report right now. I want you to hear it.
A big turnout in Bridgeport today for a march in memory of Lauren Smith Fields. She died after meeting a man on a dating app. Her family says Bridgeport police botching the response. Frank Recchia broke the story and files this report.
I just want to thank God for letting us all be here.
On a cold winter day, but under a clear blue sky,
we want justice for everybody.
Hundreds of people gather in front of the Bridgeport Police Department, including the family of 23-year-old Lauren Smith Fields, a name you first heard on News 12 Connecticut December 22nd when we broke the story, telling the world for the first time about her untimely death 2 weeks before Christmas.
We are doing this for Lauren. We're doing this for justice. We're doing this for every black girl that ever been harmed, that ever been in danger.
Moments later, the growing crowd hit the streets.
Lauren! Lauren!
Passing the old city hall, then stopping for a moment on top of the historic Broad Street steps.
Let me know when we're 5 seconds.
Let everybody take a look at what nice looks like in America now. Let's keep going.
Then the now surging crowd continued the march down Broad Street.
And I don't know if you were at the march yesterday. If you were, feel free to call in today to our show at 203-333-9422, because then you can also be part of reporting on this story that is gripping our own community in Bridgeport and throughout. This is a story that was reported in Rolling Stone magazine. NBC has picked it up. CBS This Morning is picking it up. It's becoming a national story. Why? Well, let's examine it. First of all, let's go with the facts. This woman was 23 years old. Her name was Lauren Field Smith. Lauren Smith Field, pardon me, Lauren Smith Field. And the sketchy facts that we seem to know are that on this early morning of December 12th, a man who was staying with her, a white man who was staying with her in her Bridgeport apartment, reported to the police that she appeared not to be breathing. Now, I haven't heard the 911 report. I can't tell you what his voice sounded like, but it is reported in the police report that he sounded very agitated and upset. Naturally, he would be. And the police came, and they came to the apartment. And instead of notifying the family, they did not notify the family, the police. They took the body away, and they notified the landlord. And somebody pinned a note to the door of the apartment. And the family found out 24 hours later, after frantically trying to reach Lauren, where was she, where was she? She wasn't picking up her text. It wasn't like her. They found out from the landlord, not the police, that she was dead. The body was taken immediately to autopsy. The family didn't have time or input or anything into anything going on. The white man who was found with her has not been named by the police as a person of interest, has not been named by the police in any capacity. And although I am told at the march yesterday somebody shouted his name, I have not seen his name reported in print. The family has since hired an attorney, and Darnell Crossland, who says that he is suing the city of Bridgeport and various officials within the city for failure to prosecute and failure to protect the family under the 14th Amendment. Why? Because this is his quote. When a white woman goes missing, the whole world drops everything. We are done with this valuation. It's happening all too often with black girls missing across this world, across this country, and no one says anything. Many are comparing the case. Rolling Stone magazine is comparing it to the case of Gabby Petito, who you recall was a white woman who disappeared during a road trip with her boyfriend. It made national news on a daily basis. Eventually, her boyfriend was found dead in the marshlands of the Florida Everglades. But everybody followed that story closely and became very involved with whatever was going on with that story. And Mr. Crossland maintains on behalf of the family that had Lauren Smith Fields, been a white woman, that the police would have handled this very differently. Now, once again, we don't know the cause of death. In the Gabby Petito case, you know, it was ruled a homicide. But the autopsy results are pending. It was mysterious. She did pass away. And the family is feeling very poorly treated by the Bridgeport police. I'm Lisa Wexler. Joining us now is Maria Pereira, who is a councilwoman representing a constituency in the city of Bridgeport. And Maria, you were there yesterday at the march. Can you tell us what you know about this case? And good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on. Well, I will tell you that the first I heard of it was an email that I received from the family spokesperson, Alexis Young. Now, as a city councilwoman, we receive emergency operations center notifications whenever there's any major crime committed throughout the city, whether it's an assault, a rape, a stabbing, a shooting, even serious car accidents and serious fires. And I had received nothing on this, which tells me right away that there was no perception that a crime had been committed. When Alexis reached out to me, I was shocked by the treatment she was telling me the family had received. The family had been calling the assigned detective, and he told them, stop calling me, and hung up the phone on them.
Oh, boy.
They told me that she had been dead, Lauren was dead, and it was because she wasn't answering any texts or calls that the family finally came down from Stanford, found that note pinned the door saying, if you're looking for Lauren, call me. It was the phone number to the landlord. The landlord had to be the one that told the family that their daughter had died. And then he had a business card for the detective. That's when they called the detective. The detective said he was going to be out there. They waited about an hour in the freezing cold. He never showed up, and he never notified them why he was late. He just didn't come. So there was just a number of really – what they felt were really disrespectful. We all have to have our humanity before all else. Where's the compassion? Where's the humanity – and dealing with a family that just lost their daughter, and that's their only daughter.
Oh.
So after that, I said, okay, well, I'm going to give you the email address for the acting police chief, Rebecca Garcia, and the head of the detective bureau, Captain Gillerin. She sent them an amazing email. 3 days later, I spoke. I said, what do they have to say? And Alexis shared that she had not even received a response. At that point, I said, okay, now we have to get the media involved. And so who gets a lot of credit here? Frank Recchia from News 12.
Yeah.
I contacted Frank. I forwarded the email that Alexis had written to the police chief because it was very detailed. I said, Frank, you've got to get this story done. And he had a brand new producer, and, you know, he has to kind of go in and tell the producer why he wants to do a story. And he called me. We went through it. And thank God Channel 12 said, okay, this is really interesting. They met on Bumble, which is the founder of Bumble is from Connecticut. It's a dating site. And the producer had him do it. Now, Frank met with the family on December 22nd. And I had told Frank, I can't be there. I have a longstanding commitment. It was I have a large bastion of seniors. They had their holiday party. I promised to be there. I said, it doesn't matter, Frank. What's important is you get this family story out. He did an amazing job. And as you probably know, Lisa, it went viral. It got over 10 million views on TikTok alone.
Wow.
So he gets a lot of credit. He's 12. As a matter of fact, you should know, even though the Connecticut Post is the paper of record for Bridgeport, the first story they ran on it was 5 days ago.
I want to just say that. You know, Maria, I just became aware of the story right before the weekend, so a few days ago. And I want to thank Frank Recchia for bringing it to my attention as well. He brought it to my personal attention because I didn't know about it. And you know I do this story every single day. I mean, the show, every single day. And it was shocking to me that while I try and keep up with everything, I had not heard her name. And I'm like, how is that possible? Because one of the things we do, I subscribe to the Hartford Courant. I subscribe to Connecticut, not just the Connecticut Post and all of those, but as Connecticut Insider. So I'm supposedly getting stories that other people aren't getting. I'm scouring the print media all the time. I'm watching News 12 when I can, but I don't see it, you know, all the time. I can't believe it escaped my notice, Maria, either. And I'm glad that you said that. The Connecticut Post didn't cover this until just a couple of days ago. It's crazy.
That's true. And it's kind of sad. I think that's a disservice to its readers. You know, we are the largest city in the state, and they're based, Connecticut Post is based out of Bridgeport, and yet they didn't write their first story on this till 5 days ago. It was a front page story, but what took so long? Now, I do want to tell you what was really amazing is not this past weekend, but the previous weekend, the family had a little press event. We did it at the Holiday Inn downtown, and Rolling Stone had a reporter there.
I read the whole thing.
I think you referenced it. I thought it was an amazing article.
It's a lot of detail.
And write things. Yeah, exactly. Lots of detail that a lot of other media outlets, you know, they're going to maybe give you 30 seconds. I mean, it was an amazing story. I saw her at the rally yesterday, and I really commended her on her story. She was there as well at the rally.
Now, in Rolling Stone, I had said earlier that media wasn't mentioning it, and it's true that local media is not mentioning the name. But the Rolling Stone piece mentions the name of the person that was met up via Bumble. And they mentioned that the name was a gentleman by the name of Matthew LaFountain. And they mentioned this incident report in which they say that Mr. LaFountain was a white man. And that according to the report, now remember, I'm a judge, so this is hearsay, right? Because it's a report
That's correct.
You would need to examine. Okay. But according to the report, Smith Fields, Lauren, had asked this gentleman for $40 for her nails and to meet her at her Bridgeport residence where they took shots of tequila. That's a quote. The man told police that she became ill and went to the bathroom to vomit. And following her illness, came back, and then they continued to drink tequila with mixers. They later allegedly played games, ate food, and began to watch a movie when Lauren received a text. The report says she went outside to get something from her brother and then went to the bathroom for 15 minutes. Quote, he, meaning Mr. LaFountain, thought it was odd, but didn't feel it was his place to say anything as he didn't know her that well. So the family, according to this Rolling Stone report, Maria Pereira, says that they have questions about the police report, because they claim that Lauren's nails had been done earlier that week and they were, quote, still so intact that her nails didn't need to be done for her funeral. So I don't know. So, I mean, look, what people,
tell you that,
I don't know. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I will tell you that it was her brother who absolutely is who she stepped out of the apartment to speak with.
Okay.
And the brother, as you, I'm sure you read, said she looked 100% fine. She didn't look intoxicated. She didn't look like she was tired. She didn't look ill. They spoke for 10 or 15 minutes. Now we know once she entered the apartment, the only person who can say anything about what did or didn't happen after that point is Mr. LaFontaine, right?
Yeah.
There's nobody left. So we know what he said to the police. We know what's in the report. But again, there's nobody else who's going to be able to corroborate what he's saying. So I would just say to anybody, it's certainly unusual, a 23-year-old with no underlying medical conditions, according to her own family, meets this gentleman on a dating site. This is the first time they've met. And from the time they meet, It's less than 24 hours to her death. I don't know what family wouldn't be concerned about that and wouldn't raise that as issues. Now, I think it's deeply disturbing that when the family got into her apartment, they found a used condom with semen in the trash can. How did the police not collect the most basic evidence, forensic evidence, because nobody really knows what happened at this point. We don't even have the autopsy report. And the family has hired their own somebody else to do a private autopsy, because at this point they've lost faith in the system. But for them not to have collected the glasses that they were drinking from, and the food, the plates, and the bloody sheet, and left all that in the apartment. Now, after the family complained about the original detective, who they said was so disrespectful to them and so insensitive, they put on a new one whose last name is Garcia. And I immediately raised a red flag to the family. I said, the acting police chief is Rebecca Garcia. I know she has at least one family member who works for the Bridgeport Police Department. Is this a family member? Now, Attorney Crossland said it was her family member, and I raised that as a flag. She's under a lot of fire. She's got a lot of negative press. If there's something negative that's discovered, her family member shouldn't be the one who's investigating that, because it might be concealed. That's just reality. In addition, that officer Cronin, the Detective Cronin, who was the original detective, is being investigated by Internal Affairs. The problem with that is there's only one agency, law enforcement agency, that doesn't report to Rebecca Garcia in the city, and that's Internal Affairs. They report directly to the police commission. The problem is the head of Internal Affairs is Rebecca Garcia's former boyfriend. And so it's hard to have faith in that process. There's a lot of conflicts here. And so, as you probably know, a judge recently ruled that Acting Chief Rebecca Garcia was in her position unlawfully because mm-hmm. civil service requirements weren't followed, and now it's being appealed to a higher court. So I would just tell you, I'm the city council representative. Lauren was my constituent, right? But as a mother, I have a beautiful 25-year-old daughter.
Poo-poo.
She is my
poo-poo.
Only child.
Poo-poo. Poo-poo.
And I, as a mother, who...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how this mother and father are functioning. I think I'd be rolled up in a big ball every day in my bed just crying my heart out.
I know.
But to be treated like this, so disrespectfully on top of this tragic loss, for the police not to even contact the family and tell the landlord, here's our card. If the family comes looking for her, have them call us. It's so disgraceful. It's so insensitive. There's no humanity.
Maria, you know what I was thinking? 203-333-9422. We invite your calls and comments. And this is going to be an incendiary thought, and some people are going to be mad at me for thinking it, but I thought it anyway. What if she had been white and the perpetrator had been black? And when I say perpetrator, I don't mean that Ms. LaFontaine did anything. I mean, let me just say that nothing has been proven. There's not even an autopsy result. We really don't know what happened to her. But what I mean by that is, if it had presented itself that the last person alive to see a 23-year-old white woman had been a black man, I just speculate. I don't know, but I speculate that maybe there would have been a different response. And that's what the family is speculating. That's all.
Yeah, I will say, I'm a white woman who was born and raised in Bridgeport. And I will tell you, I said to somebody myself, I said, you know, Black Rock is the most affluent section of Bridgeport.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I said, let's not even talk about Westport, Gary, and Easton. Okay. Just in Black Rock, if it was two, affluent white parents, and it was their 23-year-old daughter, and just as you said, and she had met a black male on a dating site, and he was the last person to see her alive, and they knew they had not even known each other in a personal way, face-to-face way, for even 24 hours. And that's the person who was with her when she died. I agree with you 110%. First of all, this would have never happened with the Bridgeport Police Department, how they handled it ever. I don't think any detective would have ever told the white parent calling about their white 23-year-old daughter, I don't think that any detective in Bridgeport would have said, stop calling me, and hung up the phone on them. So I'm going to have to say, and whether it upsets people or not, I'm going to say, as a white woman who's born and raised here, I agree with you. I don't think that's how it would have been handled. I think it's disgraceful that once the new detective was assigned, that he came to the apartment to collect Now, the family was shocked because they were there packing up her apartment. They were shocked that the police were just coming there almost 10 days after her death to find, and they had already taken her dishes, washed dishes, packed everything up.
In other words, the family assumed that the crime scene had been dusted and all of that stuff. Wow.
And none of that had been done. So, I mean, certainly somebody should have, that the liquid that was in the glasses, the food, because we know that these things do happen. There are men who are predatory, right? Who will drug women.
I'm not going to speculate on that. I can't go there. But you can go there,
no,
but I can't
but I'm
go
saying
there.
We know yes. it can yes. happen.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
it can happen.
There's no question that any mysterious death, any untimely death, the police have to investigate. That's why they do an autopsy. I mean, that's the whole point of an autopsy, right? To find out how somebody died. So obviously you would be treating something potentially as a crime scene. You don't know, but you have to treat it that way.
That's the whole point.
Yes, that's the whole point.
We don't know if a crime was committed.
Right.
But you have to collect the evidence while it's available.
Correct.
And hasn't been tampered with. The family's in there going in and out. They're disrupting evidence. They don't
Maria, what has the Maria, what has the police department said, other than changing the detective, what has the police department said in terms of answering questions about the protocol and the note on the door with the landlord? What have they said?
Well, I will tell you, to this day, the family is saying that the acting police chief has never communicated with them. They did go to the police station to have a meeting. They were placed in an interrogation room, the attorney and the family. And then the new detective came in, and he got quite argumentative because he was saying, Crossland's out, I'm in, I'm a Puerto Rican man, I have daughters. And they were kind of insulted by that. We don't want you because you're Puerto Rican. We want somebody who's a consummate professional. So, I mean, why would you place a family who's there and grieving, already had a terrible experience, put them in an interrogation room, a little box with the, it's just a constant chain of events. I don't know how anybody would have faith right now in what's being done by the police department. I did see Good Morning America. They ran the story yesterday morning. And Rebecca Garcia, who's the acting chief, stated that misinformation was being, put out into the universe. Okay. Well, where's that communication to the family? Why are you telling that to Good Morning America? What exactly is misinformation that's being communicated? And then I will tell you, at the rally yesterday, we found out another black woman died the very same day as Lauren in my district that I didn't know about. And the family didn't know where she was and tracked her body down at the state medical examiner's office. Didn't even know the sister had died and had been picked up by her body. And she was at a gentleman's house just doors down from where she lived. So this is really scary. For me, this is twice in my own district, two black women on the exact same day, and the police didn't notify that family either. So now you see a pattern. So I would just tell you this. The family, what they minimally deserve is, first of all, let's treat somebody who's suffering a tragedy like this with some compassion, with some respect, with some dignity, and then cross your T's and dot your I's. Do everything you can to collect any information, because you don't know what's going to come out on the autopsy, right?
That's right.
So you better have collected everything in case there is a matter here. And then when they found out that there was a guy in the house, and that they met on a dating site, the brother says, okay, did you question this guy? And the detective, Detective Cronin, said, oh, no, he didn't do anything. He's a good guy. You know, I'm sure there were a lot of serial killers that people thought were good guys. These are not appropriate remarks to make to the family. It doesn't give them faith that you're turning over every stone to find out what happened to their sister and their daughter.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Yeah. Well, I would like to know when Chief Garcia says that there's misinformation going out. I would like her to correct the record. This is a plea to her and the police officers listening to the show on WICC. Feel free to call in if we've said, if we've reported anything, if Maria has said anything that you know to be factually incorrect, please call 203-333-9422. We know you're listening. And we invite you to be part of this community conversation and to correct any misstatements of fact, because we always want to get to the truth, always. Maria Pereira, I want to thank you once again for coming on the show on short notice with great passion and eloquence, and being such an important representative of your own constituency in Bridgeport. We're going to keep with this story until we also get some answers on WICC. And I want to thank you very much for coming on. Maria Pereira, City Council, Bridgeport, on the Lauren Smith Fields case. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. We're going to switch the subject to somebody who might be a kindred spirit to me, although we've never met, Mark Donovan in Westport, who pled with his neighbor not to cut down a stand of magnificent trees to no avail, who created such a ruckus by standing in front of the trees that this got some news. But unfortunately, I'm told by the end of that day or 24 hours later, those trees, which had valiantly fought against all kinds of weather conditions and seasonal problems and disease themselves to survive, were cut down to make way for another structure. Mark Donovan, who lives in Westport, will be joining us in just a moment as we have an hour today of brave, courageous people who are fighting for their communities on the Lisa Wexler Show. 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.